This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Fiona Deering from Melbourne, Australia. And you are listening to a special Australian edition of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November the 5th, episode 1293, brought to you today by Remote Coach. Good morning, Horse World.
This is Anything Can Happen Thursday.
Everyone has a place. They're not just horses, they're part of my family.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday morning. We appreciate you being here. And for those of you that it is Friday, welcome as well. And hi, Fiona.
Hi, Glenn. How are you going?
Good. It's good to have you back. It's always good to talk about Australia and New Zealand once a month.
It sure is, and there's been a heap happening out in Australia and New Zealand the last month, too.
I know. Geez, between our racing over the weekend and yours, we have a lot to talk about.
We sure do.
Coming up, and you have some very interesting guests I'm excited to hear about today. Why don't you tell us about it?
We welcome the marvelous artist Yvette Fran from South Australia, and Yvette is she has a strong background in riding, horse anatomy, and a fine arts degree. And her pieces actually caught my eye on Facebook because they literally leap off the page at you. They're incredibly vivid. So I can't wait to have a chat with her. And we're also super excited to introduce you to Kelly Wilson. Kelly's a New Zealand girl. She's a photographer, an author, a trainer, a show jumper, and a TV star. Her and her sisters, Vicky and Amanda, were part of the Kaimanawa Wild Horse Challenge in New Zealand last year. And they've also been in the States with your Mustang 100 Day Challenge.
Oh, wow.
So she'll be lots of fun too.
Oh, very good. And I assume that is your version of a Mustang?
Well, it's the New Zealand version of a Mustang. Okay. Kelly will be able to tell us a lot more about it. But the Kaimanawa Wild Horses, they're a bit special. I wish I could have smuggled one home from New Zealand myself.
Good. Cool. That'll be great. Well, then I got to tell you, you know, we talked yesterday on the show about American Pharoah and his win of the Breeders' Cup and retiring, as a true champion over here in the United States. And then all I saw on my Facebook feed today was a certain young girl who happened to win a very important race over there. So tell us about that.
Wow. This is it has to be the best news story in racing of the year, I think. Michelle Payne is the first female jockey to have won the Melbourne Cup on, I believe, Prince of Penzance is a New Zealand bred horse, but just a horse that's raced locally. She's a Ballarat girl, I believe, by a local trainer that went up against all of the international horses. There were not many local horses in the Melbourne Cup field this year, and he won. And even better, her younger brother, who has Down syndrome, he strapped the horse. He drew barrier one for the horse. It's just, there's no downside to it.
Now, she looks about 12 in the pictures. Do we know how old she is?
I'm not actually sure how old she is.
Doesn't she look like 12, though?
she does, young. And she's been on all the press all day after the cup yesterday and all this morning. And she actually has to go out to the Kyneton races today and ride. She's got a ride in the Kyneton Cup, which is a very small country meet. So it's kind of, I'm
now,
not sure how much.
Is she anybody that you've heard of before, or is she just popping up now?
Her family have been involved in racing. Her father, Paddy Payne, was, I believe, a very good jockey. He's actually, I must do some research, but he's actually a name that I remember from when I was growing up. She's one of 10, and her mother was actually killed in a car accident when she was 6 months old. So her father has brought up these 10 children, and you know, the way she's
killed
her. Yeah, I know. The way she's handled herself in all the press has been, she's just been a delight to watch.
Now, is she one of the older ones or one of the younger ones?
I'm not actually sure. I think she may be one of the younger ones. She may actually be the youngest. I read somewhere that she was 6 months old when her mother passed away in a car accident.
But I'm going to do my story.
Yeah, I'm going to do my darndest to have her on next month.
Yeah, that would be great. And, you know, I love the picture of her with her brother with Down syndrome. It was such a cute picture with the two of them together.
And look, you know, when she came back to the scale, the first thing she did was give Stevie a hug and a kiss. And, you know, I don't think there was a dry eye from anyone watching that race yesterday.
Do we even know the horse's name that won?
Yeah.
Because she's getting all the press.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, he's had two lots of leg surgery and a colic surgery. So,
really?
You know, yeah.
And the Melbourne Cup, would that be kind of your version of the Kentucky Derby?
It's a distance race. So it's over 3,200 meters, which is that, I think it's 2 miles.
That's a lot of race.
So, you know, it's certainly.
And then to be won by a horse that has had two leg surgeries and a colic?
Yeah. And the other, I mean, the little bit of sad news about it is there's a horse who he ran in his fifth Melbourne Cup yesterday, one of the English horses that comes out called Red Cadeau. And he's run second 3 times in the race and he's 10 now. He actually broke down in the straight about 200 metres out from the post. But he's okay. They took him down to the vet clinic at Werribee and he has a fractured sesamoid bone, which they're hopeful of being able to fix. And it looks like he'll actually retire out here to Living Legends, who we spoke to last month.
Yeah. Well, if he's going to retire, that's a beautiful place to do it.
I think that he's landed on his feet there, that's for sure.
Well, that is an incredible story. I got to tell you, we saw it over here as well. Is it Michelle, right? We saw that story over here. I must have seen it 100 times on my Facebook feed. So it's getting a lot of press.
Yeah, no, good honor. Look, it was a bit of one for the battlers. It was nice to see the little guy get up. You know, the trainer, Darren Weir, he has horses based up in Ballarat and Warrnambool and, you know, has a lot of horses in training, but is doing a great job, but certainly isn't like the flashy international trainers and, as we call them, the international raiders who come in to try and steal our cup.
Well, now, do you think, I assume this horse was somewhat of a long shot too.
He was over 100 to 1.
It must have paid a fortune.
Yeah. A lot of my friends in music theatre put money on him because of the Gilbert and Sullivan connection, and they're all about $500 richer, which is annoying.
Wow. Imagine if you had that trifecta, huh?
I think that, I can't remember what the trifecta was. It was pretty good. I actually picked third based on his Cox Plate run, but, you know, apart from that, I'm a hack. And I bet a dollar each way is a big bet for me, so I'm never going to make money out of it.
Well, that's great. Well, that is a neat story. I hope we can get her on. That would be fun
to talk to her. Yeah, I hope so, too. I think she'll be a lot of fun.
Now, what else is going on down there, down under?
Down under, I've been over to New Zealand to the Equidays trade show where I presented for the second year in a row. And this year I actually got to present with horses and riders instead of classroom presentations. So that was a heap of fun. I'd been working with two nervous riders for some months in the lead up and had them out there showing their stuff because what better way to help people get over their nerves than put them in front of a crowd on their horse.
And how they do.
They did fantastically. I was so proud of them. On the last day, they were jumping a meter and were, you know, asking me to put it up. And I was the one that had to go, no, we're not going any higher than that. That's where I'm. So they were great. And, you know, the Equidays team over there are just so much fun. And it was really good going back for the second year and being welcomed with open arms. And they run such a fantastic show. And I even got to go down to one of the big studs the day after, one of the big thoroughbred studs in Cambridge, and do some foal handling with my friend Lee Wills from Equus International, who I think she's been on the show also.
Yes, I think so, yes.
Yeah, and so I had a fantastic time at this beautiful stud with all the amazingly gorgeous and squishy and cute foals, and got to watch the work Lee does, which also taught me a lot. So I had a fabulous time, and then I wandered back up to the airport and popped in at a Warwick Schiller clinic for an hour or two on my way through, and It was fantastic. I love New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand. I want to get there. That's on my bucket list.
Yeah, it really should be. It's beautiful. They were all telling me that they were worried about their drought with their ankle-high green grass. So
I'll tell you what, we just got back from California, and they haven't had rain in 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And it is just dry as a – I mean, it's – yeah, they don't know what the a drought is.
The must be so expensive.
Oh, yeah, it's just everything, isn't it? They have to worry about every drop of water, you know, so it's
– Absolutely.
It's a whole different ballgame. Now, they're predicting they're going to get pretty good rains this winter, so let's hope so.
Yeah.
Let's hope
so. It's pretty dry here in Australia. The week before, I'd driven up to the Victorian Northern Territory border, and in the first week of October, and everyone had hay down and was cropping. And then I went to New Zealand, and whilst they're ankle deep in, you know, green, lush grass, I rather suspect that normally at this time of year they'd also be ankle deep in mud. So, you know, I kind of get where they're coming from, but it was still fluorescent green compared to Australia.
And we'll remind everybody that we're talking to Fiona. She is here the first Thursday of the month with the Australia edition. And I will also remind everybody that you guys are coming from spring into summer when we're going fall into winter.
We sure are.
So you're in mud season.
Not as much mud as normal, but we're getting to hot season. We've had crazy. Melbourne is internationally known for being four seasons in one day, but it's taking it. You know, it's just being silly this year.
I think weather's being silly everywhere this year.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, and let's talk a little bit. So basically, as we talked about in the previous shows with Remote Coach, you were helping these two riders. And that's what Remote Coach is. It's there to help people, right?
That's right. So these riders worked with me via emails and Skype hookups, but as well as working with the audio downloads that I record so that you can use them as part of your normal daily ride. Lots of ideas for exercises and exercises you can ride along with, and just lots, you know, there are lots of difference. These girls were both jumpers, which promoted me to do a poles download. So I've got a brand new poles download with some great exercises with poles that can also be turned into jumps. Obviously, jumping is a little bit hard to do an audio download on, but lots and lots of ideas for exercises to supple and control your pace and rhythm with poles that are a little more exciting than just four poles in a straight row on the ground. So those girls worked with those downloads lots, and they really did lots of planning for their to work through their confidence challenges, and I was so proud of them. They were just, you know, by the end of it, they really were going, oh, can we put them up, or can we put some more jumps out? And that's when I went, yeah, my work here is done.
Well, that's great. You know, it's always fun to have those success stories. Well, and of course, if anybody's interested, they could be those two are from New Zealand, right? So they can be from any country, right?
Yeah, and so you can either order them online, and they just come down the pipe via a link on your email, and you download them straight onto your phone or your MP3 player, or I can also load them up onto an MP3 player and post them anywhere in the world. So I've got some fairly well-priced little MP3 players that clip on so that they're nice and stable, because the mobile phones now are so big, you can't put them in your breeches pocket anymore. So, and they're all ready to go, ready for, dare I say it, Christmas.
There you go. And they can order them where?
At the Remote Coach website, which is www.remote-coach.com, or you can contact me via the Facebook page, which is just Remote Coach.
All right, tell us about our first guest coming up.
Yvette is an artist who I'm really interested to hear her story, because she had quite a long break from painting as well. If you have a look at her spiritofequine.com.au page or her Spirit of Equine Facebook page, the works just leap off the page. And I'm a bit of an art buff, so I've been following her works for a couple of years now, and actually hope to have one on my wall at some point. So I'm really looking forward to having a chat with her and talking about how she started painting again and her muse, her horse Tookie, which I'm sure I've probably pronounced incorrectly, but her horse Tookie, who is the star of many of her works, who I've fallen a little bit in love with, I have to say. Welcome to the show, Yvette.
Thank you. How are you going?
Very well, thanks. Now, I've been having a look through your website and I'm interested in that as a painter, you had quite a long break from painting while you bought up your family and farmed. Was there a particular trigger that made you come back to it again?
It's one of those things. Artists are born artists. They can't not be. It's a lifetime calling, as it were. And during that 10-year period when I was focused on kids and the farm, the art was always at the back of my mind. It's just that it wasn't a good fit at that time. And I packed everything away. And all the time that I'm thinking about farming and about what my children need, subconsciously I'm constantly turning over ideas and ways of looking at things. So when I got back to art after 10 years, I was amazed at what came out.
And you were pretty ready to go because you went, am I right in thinking at that point you went straight to New York with your art? You didn't mess around?
Not quite. It's actually the New York story. It's one of those things that nothing like good friends. It started out as, there was just one day and I said, that's it, I've got to make art. So as I've always been passionate about horses, and that's another thing, I have two callings in life, art and horses, and I can't separate them. And I'm so lucky that in my profession I can put the two together and be inspired every single day by what I believe is beautiful and fills my heart. But that New York story, I thought I'd start painting, and someone suggested I go on an exhibition in Adelaide, and people saw the exhibition and started to approach me about doing a little bit of art for them. And I thought, well, if I'm going to go for it, I'll go at it hard because I'm never one to do anything by half. So we went to Equitana, and then I think we've done Equitana three times. On my second trip, a gentleman approached me and said, your work would be wonderful in America. And I thought, well, that sounds like a plan along the lines of, I have very big dreams and ambitions.
Yeah, I was going to say, my work would be great any place anybody wants to buy it. I'll sell it anywhere.
And, and I'm looking at Australia and going, 22 million people, and America's 320 million people. 1% of 1% has got to be a lifetime commitment. So I thought, well, how are we going to get to America? I thought I'd have a fundraiser on the farm. So I rang up a few of my friends and said, let's have a party, do a bit of a fundraiser, have, the traditional Australian three-course dinner and live music in our big machinery shed. And one of my girlfriends said, that sounds absolutely fantastic. So you're going to New York then? And I all I said was, I'm trying to go to America, but that sounds like a plan. So
that's as good as any place.
Look, I haven't got to New York yet, but it's definitely on the agenda now. We've done the West Coast.
And you've done some trade shows on the West Coast?
I thought I'd, told that it was art that fitted into what was known as the contemporary Western genre. And after doing a great deal of research, we thought we'd do a trip from the top to the bottom, all West Coast. We did about 10,000 miles and looked at galleries and met some of my Facebook friends and just thought about what options and opportunities there might be. So it was a research trip 2 years ago. We are now going back next year because during the course of the research trip, we ended up at the American Quarter Horse Hall of Fame, which is in Amarillo, Texas.
Yep, yep.
And they just so happened to have an art exhibition. And I thought, well, that looks like a good fit. So I entered and they've accepted me. So that's what we're going for in August next year, is to exhibit in this Horses in Art show, which is pretty cool. I would have to say, without doing my research, I'll be the only Australian exhibiting there.
Well, I got to tell you, that is a special thing to get into that. And, you know, needless to say, there's money in Texas. So people, you know, people buy stuff there. So that's good. Now, let's get back to your work. Your work is so vibrant, and a lot of it's pastels, which is not something you see a lot anymore.
That's something that we found on the research trip. There's so much oil on canvas, and when we found a gallery that we particularly liked, we'd have a talk to the gallery director, and they're just going, "We love work on paper. We'd love to see watercolors. We love to see pastels." And I'd go, "Well, it just so happens that that's what I do." And we in fact have a handshake agreement with a gallery that I absolutely adore in Jackson Hole. And when we're done in Texas, the work that doesn't sell there, if any, we'll be heading there after that, and I'll be exhibiting over there. So it's an interesting one that people have always thought that they want to collect painted works, but as soon as you start seeing pastel works, and I actually work in ink as well, and I do that because I cannot get a more intense or pure colour except with those particular medium. And the more intense the colour, the more it fills me. And it's almost like the horses that I paint become more than real. They end up with a life that transcends the paper, and in fact, almost more than the horse itself out in the paddock, because it's timeless. The horse day may not be there.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And, I mean, the ones that first caught my eye are the series of Tuki, which are they watercolours or pastels?
Well, I do mainly inks of hers. She
oh, really?
Was, they are mainly inks. I do some pastels of her, and I'll certainly be doing more of her. But, the ink series was an interesting one. I took Tuki is an interesting horse.
Tell us about the horse.
It's the story behind her.
She has a wonderful story, and I don't know that we're done yet. But I went to my hairdresser, who I knew had a few race horses, and one day I said, "Look, I'm a bit between horses. I haven't got anything to ride, and I've just, you know, after the 10 years with the kids and the farm, I said, I'd really love to have a horse." And he said, "I have something for you." He said, "But she's difficult." And I went, well, let's see how difficult she is. So we went out and had a look at her. She tried to bite him, she tried to kick him, and she reared a number of times. And I thought,
perfect,
beauty,
I'll take him.
and that's it. Anyway, she had a bit of a leg injury, and I noticed after all the kicking and everything, I said, how about we let that heal up a bit and I'll take her home. So I went out there a couple of weeks later, and she came up to me like she'd been waiting for me all her life. And I put her on the float, brought her home, and she's been on the farm ever since. And the first day I got on her, nothing happened. And I thought, well, I've never had a horse that won't move before, so what's going on? And I gave her a few verbal cues, and I gave her a few tickles in the belly with my heels, and none of it worked. So I gave her an almighty kick in the guts, and still nothing worked. And I thought, you rotten bloody cow. I called her a turkey, and got the end of my reins and slapped her across the shoulders, and I reckon she levitated a couple of feet off the ground. It just scared the living daylights out of both of us. And I thought, well, at least now I've found a go button. So, she's a delightful horse to be on, but I've lost count of the number of near misses over the years and a few boots that I've had because she still underneath everything is a turkey. But on good days I call her Tuki. So that's her official name is her racing name was Tortellina, And yes, on a bad day, she's a turkey, and on a good day, she's a tookie. And when she is my art muse, she is tookie all the time.
Oh, she's just beautiful. I mean, those pieces of her, they just leap off the page, and I'm pretty keen on having one on my wall at some point, I tell you.
She was just mad about being named like something that sounds like an Italian dinner, a tortellina. You know, doesn't it sound like you should put some spaghetti sauce on it? She's just mad about that. That's what I think.
I'm thinking there's no accident. The owner, the guy who bred her and had her before I got her, was Italian.
There you go. See? See?
Funny.
She is pretty.
Oh, that's it. But no, she's been, I took a heap of photos of her, and she is quite a performer. And it's not all about, look at me, I'm beautiful. It's all about, look at me, I'm having a great time. And yeah. I got to take all these photos of her just doing what makes her happy. She is like that constantly. And even when I'm not riding her, she just runs around for the pure pleasure of it.
Because she can.
Exactly. Yeah, she's got more personality in one ear than some horses have in their whole bodies.
And you do a lot of commission work as well as the pieces you do for your pleasure?
I do. It started out probably, it must be nearly 12 months ago. I thought I'd do a calendar for my family. And I popped it on Facebook and said, I'm doing a calendar. I was only planning on half a dozen. I'm doing a calendar. Would anyone else like one? And I sold 130 of them, which I thought wasn't bad. that was really cool. So that kind of, I suppose, raised profile, raised interest in what I was doing as an artist. And then one of my Facebook friends from, I think she's Austrian, she said, I challenge you to do a painting a day. And I went, oh, great, thanks. I needed a challenge. So let's get on with it. What am I going to do? And I thought, what can I do that only takes a day to do? And I looked at all these amazing photos I had of Tookie. And I thought, I have been wanting to know what to do for years. Now I know. And I started painting her. And I put a picture up. I'll tell you what, Facebook's been fascinating. I should be marketing Facebook. But I put it up there. And it sold. And I went, that's cool. And I put another one up there, and that sold. And then people started asking me for paintings that I hadn't done yet. And I can remember at one stage I did 3 paintings in one day to keep up with demand on this Tookie series. And that was an awfully big day, I can tell you. And I've ended up doing almost 60 ink paintings of Tookie. I have sold about 50 of them around Australia, and she has gone from my horse in the paddock to this icon of, I don't know, horsiness, of joy in life, of the Australian landscape, of all of those things.
I think you're right. You know, the joy that comes through in those photos, I think that's exactly the right word with the paintings of her. Like, there's so much life in there.
Oh, and that's it. And that's what my work's always been about. I studied equine anatomy.
Yes.
And I still draw skeletons for the pure pleasure of it because I love anatomy. Used to do show jumping. All show jump riders know how much they worry about legs and things and looking after their horses. So that was one of the things that I found fascinating. And I think I use it every day in my work because I know exactly what's going on. I don't just know how a horse moves and how a horse looks and how the light plays on their surface, but I also know how all the joints and all the muscles connect and how they all work. And I'm actually looking at the idea that if you teach people to see like an artist sees, they can actually see their horses better and know their horses better and be able to judge what's going on with their horses better as well. And that's a bit of a catching idea too. And I think that's why people ask me to paint their horses. Because I'm not painting my version of their horses. I'm painting something that I see in their horses that through the stories that they tell me and through the images that they send me, I kind of get under the skin. I get to know those animals so well. And it's exciting. I mean, if I only ever drew my own horses.
Absolutely.
You know, you'd end up with a whole heap of grey horses.
Absolutely. Look, thank you so much for your time today, Yvette. And if you want to have a look at her work, it's at Yvette's work at spiritofequine.com.au or on the Facebook page of the same name. Really, make sure you go and have a look at the particularly at the series of Tuki, because I'm sure you'll fall in love with her as much as I have. Thanks so much for your time, Yvette.
Thank you. It's been delightful.
Well, you know, speaking of art, we were at Monty Roberts over the weekend.
And was it fantastic?
Yes, it was. And Pat, his wife, is a sculptress. And that whole, and also a collector of fine Western art, paintings and other stuff. The place is like a museum. I mean, the house is huge, and it's just like a museum. There's just there must be 100 paintings in there. And she also painted before she started sculpting. But then there must be 100 sculptures in there.
Are they large sculptors?
Some of them are 8 inches long, you know, pretty small. Yeah. And then she's got some that are 3 feet. You know, a yard, a meter. So she's got.
Is she sculpting horses or other forms?
She does almost all horses. She's won many awards with that, and does very well with the sculptures. And then she also does cattle, steers, and things like that. She's done wild animals, cheetahs, and things too. But it's almost all animals of some sort, and just beautiful stuff. She gets all because obviously. Monty Roberts' wife, right? You know, she knows horses, so the horses are done so much to perfection with the muscling and the facial expressions and just everything.
I love sculpture, and in particular I love bronzes. I have a number of small horse bronzes, but and I love art full stop, but I don't have an artistic bone in my body.
Me either, which is why I appreciate, you know, what other people can do. And you know, I do like pastels. So this, you know, what I said is true. You don't find a lot of them.
You don't. Yeah. No, and certainly not ones, you know, that Tuki series, they just leap off the page. It looks like she's going to just gallop down your wall.
Which is why she's selling so many of them.
Yeah. Good on her.
Yeah, good on her. Well, let's take a break for our song for today, and then we're coming back with another guest who's part of a family of sisters that you're going to want to hear about in New Zealand, where they're always lovely.
Got my Cadillac pack, she's loaded and ready. Gonna take her down the road to the rodeo. And with a new tank of fuel and a cool Mountain Dew, I'm gonna do just what I wanna do. We'll be riding wild ponies and chasing pretty girls, shooting for the title, the champion of the world. We'll just show up, take the money and run. Even if I don't win, well, I still have fun. Just riding wild ponies and chasing pretty girls, driving all around the world. Granddaddy said I need to find a girl and settle down. It's a secret to a happy life. I'm feeling pretty good. Man, he must have been right. I just found my one only for the night. Well, Bucky's on the phone and darling's heading home. Me, I just travel wherever I may roam. I just show up, take the money and run. Sometimes I don't win, but I still have fun. Just riding wild ponies and chasing pretty girls, driving all around the world. finally won the title, the champion of the world. We just show up, take the money and run. Even though I always win, well, I still have fun. Just riding wild ponies and chasing pretty girls, driving all around the world. We'll be driving all around the world, another half a million miles around the world.
Well, you're listening to the Australian edition of Horses in the Morning. I'm here with Fiona, a remote coach. And Fiona, we are going to be going to our next guest. Tell us about Kelly.
Kelly Wilson is one of the Wilson sisters from New Zealand. And if you live in New Zealand, these are practically a household name there. They've recently had the TV show Keeping Up with the Kaimanawas, which documented their wild horse challenge throughout New Zealand last year. Kelly's also a photographer, an author, a trainer. Not much she can't do, so welcome to Kelly. Hi, Kelly, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I have to just over 12 months ago, I wouldn't have known what a Kaimanawa horse was. And then I went to Equidays for the first time. So I got to see the horses when they'd been out of the wild for, I think, was it 90 days at that point?
Equidays is 150 days.
Right. And then I was back over for Horse of the Year show and got to see them at the end of the program. And I've just fallen in love with them.
They're a pretty remarkable breed.
They absolutely are. So you guys, for people who don't know, the Kaimanawa Stallion Challenge, can you tell us a little bit about how that worked over that 12-month period?
So the Kaimanawa Stallion Challenge is based on the Extreme Mustang Makeover, which they have in America. But it's a little bit different. The horses aren't coming out of BLM yards. They're coming directly from the wild. So the day they get mustered by helicopters, they get transported to our property in stock trucks, and they're still stallions, never been handled, never been touched, never had their feet done. And so we're starting completely from scratch with these wild horses.
Wow. And you, I've just finished reading the book, Stallion Challenges, because in between training these wild horses, you also wrote two books in about a 12-month period because you didn't have enough to do. And you had a TV show that documented the whole experience also.
Yeah, we did. It was remarkable getting mainstream media behind the horses and really raising the profile of the work we were doing to save them from slaughter.
Yeah. So you and your two sisters, your first book, For the Love of Horses, tells the story of you and your sister's childhood, which, you know, wasn't always easy. Was the horse bug always there right from the start with all three of you?
Yeah, definitely. Vicky, the older sister, was absolutely horse crazy, and Amanda and I obviously grew up around horses because of Vicky, and so we just always had horses in our lives, and it's really become a main point in what we do.
Now, you're a Grand Prix show jumper, right?
I competed to Grand Prix on ponies and now compete in the amateur series, but both of my sisters compete in Grand Prix and World Cup classes, so they're right at the top of the game.
Wow.
And then last year, was it last year or this year you went to the States to do the Mustang Challenge?
Yeah, it was this year. We headed over to America in April.
Yep.
And then competed in the Extreme Mustang Makeover in Idaho. So we had 100 days to train the Mustangs for this event.
How'd that go?
It was very insightful. We just assumed they were completely wild, like the Kaimanawas, and then realized, you know, the differences between a wild horse straight off the range in New Zealand and then the Mustangs out of the BLM yards. They vary quite a lot. So we found the Mustangs easier in a lot of ways, but they also had a few other issues from, you know, being in captivity before the challenge, which kind of made some of their training elements more difficult. So it was really, really interesting. And then I finished sixth overall out of 38 trainers, and then one of the other New Zealand girls with us was runner-up.
Oh, wow. That's terrific. So would you, if you had to compare the two, what would you say are the traits that are different? Is it because of they were in the pens and they have somewhat been handled and somewhat not nicely in many cases? Is that where the difference came in?
I think having the Mustangs used to fences already was significantly easier. Mm-hmm. And they were also used to eating out of, you know, eating hay and drinking out of water troughs. So for the Kaimanawas, everything is traumatic and new, where the Mustangs are really only the training element is new. And then the biggest difference we found was actually on a psychological level, because the wild Kaimanawas coming out of the mountains, you're putting them into yards. So you're almost giving them initially a worse off life because you're making them captive. Where the Mustangs are already, the Mustangs are already captive and they're bored. So anything you offer the Mustangs, it makes their lives better.
Interesting. Yeah.
So we find the Mustangs really appreciative, and they really give 110% the whole way through the process.
The Kaimanawas, you said you bring them in straight from the range, and the book describes, and obviously the photography in the book is largely yours also, is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, gorgeous photos of the Kaimanawa ranges. That area is actually, is that protected by the New Zealand Defence Force? Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, so the Kaimanawa horses run in a 60,000 acre area which is owned by the military.
Right.
So there's no actual public access to these horses. I think once a year public can go in and view them on a designated, you know, tour, but the rest of the time they're on army land. So and it's also really rare plant life that's kind of in that area, which is why the horses are mustered and culled either for slaughter or rehoming.
Now, quick question about the horses yet. Do they tend to run about the same size? Most Mustangs tend to be in the 15-hand range. Are they a little bigger, smaller?
Smaller. It's very rare to get a hack. So generally sort of 13 to 14 two-hand is the average for a Kaimanawa. We've had three or four that are 15 hands. We've got one that's 16 hands, but no one's ever seen one that big before.
Got it. So they're more pony size.
Yeah, they're more pony size.
Cool. And was there history that they were being bred for military purposes way back when?
Originally, they were just the horses that had been introduced to New Zealand that had turned feral. And then in the early 1900s, the army horses got strangles and the soldiers were told to shoot their horses because of the outbreak. And instead, they took their horses up into the mountains and released them with the wild ones, hoping that some would survive. And almost all of them did. So the army horses bred with the feral horses and created the breed known as the Kaimanawa.
There's a neat story, huh?
That's
a
great
story.
And I was at the Equiday evening shows, and I actually wanted to try and grab you to have a chat about the show, coming onto the show while I was there. But you and anyone from your family, it seemed, was completely swamped by small children every time I tried to approach. You guys run camps for kids at your property as well?
Yeah, we do, but they're also so in demand that we've got people booking for 2017 already.
Wow.
Yeah, they've booked out for 12 months in advance at the moment.
Yeah, no, I was, I had another sip of my champagne. Was it you who spun around and around and around and around in circles on the Saturday night?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember how many times you spun around in a circle, but
I was a bad one. I ended up on the ground really fast, and then my little sister showed me how to do it better.
How much rivalry is there between the three of you?
Quite a bit, but we also have our own strengths. So I do like a lot of the photography and the writing. My little sister is really passionate about film and has her first documentary out called Wind Leaders. And then our older sister is 100% just about the horses. So we friendly rivalry, but we also have our own strengths, which we can focus on as well.
Do you think, because your sister, I'm coming from a marketing point of view now, you know, and I'm on your Facebook page, keeping up with the, I can't even say the name of your breed, so I'll let you guys, I think you have to have an accent to say that, so I'll let you guys do that. But, you know, I'm on there, and do you think that from the marketing, because you guys are sisters, that has helped you? Whereas if you had tried to go out and do it yourself, would you have, you know, is that a shtick that really helps?
Well, we couldn't have done it ourselves. Okay. Absolutely, 100% we couldn't have, because, you know, it helps that one of us has a strength in photography and one of us has a strength in the film, so that we can actually show and have good examples of like what we're doing on social media so people can see the work we're doing. Because if it was just us as horse trainers, or just one of us as a horse trainer, it wouldn't have sort of the people finding out about it. I think it really works well that the three of us are working together.
Yeah.
I mean, 25,000 people agree. So you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, well, over 500,000 people watch the TV show, which is remarkable statistics in New Zealand.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been trying to get hold of the TV show here, and it was obviously only shown in New Zealand, but I'll have to grab the... have there been DVDs released yet that people can purchase through your site?
Yes, but the zoning doesn't work in America, so we'll have to do something about that.
Oh, no, I'm just over the ditch in Australia. So,
oh, right, yeah, it works 100% in Australia.
Yeah, yeah, it's just Glenn who'll miss out.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he will miss out.
Usually it's you guys complaining you're not getting our stuff. Here it's the other.
That's right. See, it's about time the yeah, pendulum exactly.
America's just behind the times.
It's revenge.
So what's next for you, Kelly? Are you writing another project?
I'm writing my fourth book, The Mustang Ride, which is about our adventures in America with the wild horses. And then Amanda filmed our entire time over there. So that's coming out as a documentary under the same name in film festivals next year.
Wow.
Well, can we get the books over here?
You can get the books.
Okay, so tell us the names of the books.
The first book is For the Love of Horses, and the second one is Stallion Challenges, and then two are coming out in October next year.
Okay.
Wow. And I mean, Glenn, this Kaimanawa challenge that happened at Equa Days and then the final was at Horse of the Year. I mean, that grandstand at Horse of the Year was full, and there were people 8-10 deep around the whole arena. I mean, it was like being at a rock concert, and people had become...
Yeah.
Yeah, people have become so invested in each horse's journey, you know. I mean, I was fantastic for me because I got to see the change between Equa Days and Horse of the Year, but it was like being at a rock concert.
That's what I couldn't understand about America, because in New Zealand it was so massive and every single horse had a personality. The public were 100% behind it. People were supporting it. Everyone cared. People still care now, a year later.
Yeah.
And in America, there was, you know, you'd be lucky if there were hundreds watching the finals.
You know, you're right. And the only thing that we have over here that's a training challenge that brings anybody in as far as spectators is Road to the Horse. And they're working with quarter horses off the range, but, you know, they're bred. So, you know, they haven't been touched necessarily, but Road to the Horse brings in 10,000 people. But that's the only one, even the Mustang, all the Mustang shows have not brought in what you guys have over there. Is it much more of a horse culture over there?
New Zealand, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big horse culture, but I think it also is more accessible for people to see and access.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And look, the Kaimanawa Heritage Horse Trust had been really behind it. I ended up have become quite good friends with Lee Wills, who I know was very involved with the Stallion Challenge.
And to be honest, where you were in the United States is in the middle of nothing. You know, it's not like you were in New York or, you know, a metropolitan area either, which is harder to get to for people to go watch. Road to the Horse is done in Lexington, Kentucky, and that tends to bring out more horse people. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, we were the only English trainers competing in the American Challenge.
Is that right?
Yeah, everyone else is cowboys and cowgirls and cow western saddles.
I don't want to know what you thought of all of that. I just don't
We learned a thing or two about what to do and quite a lot about what not to do.
Did you come home with cowboy boots and a cowboy hat and a big bell buckle?
We came home with cowgirl hats and one of the, Alexa, one of the girls that went with us, won the Young Gun Trainer of the Year. So she won a buckle.
Yeah, so she got her belt buckle. Good. All right.
Good.
She's good. Americanized yep. now.
She's, yeah, she is indeed.
But, I mean, you guys don't do things by halves either. I remember at the end of Equidays last year standing around with you girls and Warwick Schiller, and Warwick just going, "You've got to stop talking now, because every time you tell me a story, you're scaring the hell out of me about various riding out, mustering with the Maoris and all of that sort of thing."
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
it's pretty wild
we
stuff.
We took Warwick and his wife for a ride the week after. And I think they were quite shocked about the kind of countryside we took them over.
The words I heard used by Warwick were, "We rode down cliffs and Robin had bruises for a fortnight." But he also said it was one of the best things he's ever done.
Yeah, it's quite a remarkable ride up there with the wild horses.
Yeah. You went out, was it 90 Mile Beach when the wild horses came out and ran to the beach? Yeah.
So what kind of things do you do in the show that Fiona saw?
In the TV show?
No, when you go out and do your
stallion,
shows.
The final of the Stallion Challenge.
Oh, okay, so the horses are obviously, we train them to jump because we professionally are show jumpers.
Right.
They all did some jumping in their workouts, but we do a lot of liberty work too. So my stallion worked with just a rope around his neck, and I did my workout bareback. So he had limited gear on, and then he also had a little 7-year-old girl ride and jump him in the class. And then Vicky's one is trained to work with nothing, so he doesn't even need a rope around his neck. He just works on voice command, and he's very good. Like he's competing 1.10 now, which is 3'6" or 3'9" an American standard. And so we try and get them doing like obstacle kind of type things and liberty work and then jumping as well. So a little bit of everything just to showcase their versatility.
Wow.
And that evening also Vicky was competing. She dislocated her shoulder in the class before that also. So she was out there riding one-handed just to add to her degree of difficulty.
Yes, which really wasn't ideal because she went and she won fan favourite and she was the winner of best conditioned, and she really, the horse is so remarkable, she had a good shot at winning the title.
Yeah.
And then an hour before she was supposed to ride, she fell off one of her show jumpers competing in the Grand Prix and dislocated her shoulder, and they literally got her shoulder back into the socket 10 minutes before the final started, and she had to get on her horse. Well, she didn't have to. She was stupid enough to get back on.
Yeah, I told you they were tough, Glenn.
And she didn't even warm up. She just went into the ring, completely changed her workout because she couldn't use her arm at all, and most of the things she needed to do required two hands, and just did a freestyle like last minute.
So let me get this right. She fell off one of the expensive show jumpers and stayed on the wild one.
She did indeed.
Yes.
And she rode him onto a moving trailer and turned him around and rode him off that moving trailer. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and jumped a little bit, but it was quite the atmosphere for
Now, I need to know, where's your stallion? Where's Anzac? Is he making a little girl happy, or is he still at your place?
No, he's still at our place. He gets used in our camps by the beginner riders.
Oh, great.
And he's super cute.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, he was pretty cool. I have a big soft spot for a lot of the stallions, having seen them through those two events, and just having my eyes opened to the Kaimana was, there are a couple that could have come back as excess luggage in my bags, that's for sure.
one of the other ones was out competing a 1.20 last weekend in a show jump and it's only a pony, so that's almost Grand Prix height for ponies, and it's only been out of the wild for 18 months.
Wow.
So you have fantastic pony jumping classes in New Zealand. My trade stand was alongside that second arena where most of the pony classes were at Horse of the Year. And I couldn't believe the numbers of ponies going around in those big classes. I don't think we have, we just don't have that in Australia, and you guys are all over it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great for the young riders.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck. Can't wait for the next books to come out.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute privilege talking with you both.
And I did want to let everybody know here in the United States that I found the books on Amazon. We'll post a link to those on our Facebook page and in our show notes as well. And I, on the For the Love of the Horses book, you had 9 customer reviews, all 5-star, and some glowing comments there. So that says something. If you have 9 positive reviews in the United States without somebody being a jerk, you're doing good. You're doing really, really good.
It is a number one bestseller, and it's in its 4th print edition, so it has been very well received.
Well, good.
Congratulations.
Good Christmas idea coming up. Well, she sounds delightful. And, you know, one of the things I didn't want to say when she was on, because I didn't want to embarrass her, is these 3 are absolutely beautiful, which doesn't hurt. The 3 girls are just stunningly beautiful. And
they're the whole package, and they're lovely to boot.
Yeah, I mean, and they just have everything going for them. And, you know, I think she was being a little humble, too. You know, she was talking about how many people were there and the place was absolutely packed and all of that. Part of that is because they were there. I mean, they're very popular. So,
as I said, at Equidays, if you saw a group of children, you knew that one of the Wilson girls was nearby. They were like the Pied Piper.
We kind of have our version of that a little bit in Stacey Westfall. And, you know, like at Road to the Horse, there was a line always about 200 deep trying to get to Stacey Westfall. So, you know, she was also bridleless and bitless and has that famous YouTube video that's gotten 10 million views.
Seen that.
Yes,
yeah.
You probably have. And that was Stacey Westfall. So, you know, we also have a version of who they not quite as popular as them. Lisa Wallace, who's been on our show many times, trains Mustangs over here and is also a 4-star eventer. And her husband does the horse husband show with us once a month here on Horses
in
the Morning.
Which I've been enjoying listening to.
Oh, have you? It's a lot of fun to do for me. And his wife, Elisa, is kind of what they do, you know, so professionals in a different discipline and then also training these horses and hoping to bring them into the mainstream. So,
yeah. And look, I think this has, you know, most of the stallions that were being mustered in the Kaimanawa musters were being sent to slaughter. And this was, you know, most of the mares and foals were able to be rehomed, but the stallions were probably put in a little bit of the too hard basket. And the Kaimanawa Heritage Trust Group have been instrumental in setting up this stallion challenge and ensuring that these horses had a future as well. So, you know, it's been fantastic for raising the profile of the breed.
Well, good on all of them. Anytime we can
Absolutely.
Keep them away from slaughter, good on all of them.
Yep.
Great guests this month, as usual, as you always do. And tell everybody where they can find you and Remote Coach.
The Remote Coach website is at www.remote-coach.com. And you can find me on Facebook. The Facebook page is just Remote Coach. So come along. We've got lots and lots of things going on the site and products to look at and articles to read that I'm writing a lot of. So come along and say hi.
Very good. And then, of course, you can find Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com, all of our past episodes there. If you missed Fiona's past couple of episodes, you can just go there and search Fiona, F-I-O-N-A, just like it sounds, and you'll find her. She'll pop up, and all of her past episodes will pop up as well if you want to go back or search Australian. We always put them in as the Australian episode, so you can find them that way. Our best way to listen to our recorded version of our show is on our app, and you can find that anywhere in the world. No restrictions, no borders on that. We have listeners in 90 countries on the app. Just search for Horse Radio Network in the App Store, iOS or Android. It's free and it's easy to use. We'll be back here tomorrow. Really Bad Ads is back. So we'll be back tomorrow with Jamie and Jennifer and I, and we'll be doing a whole pile of new Really Bad Ads. I know you've been missing them over the last couple of weeks.
I love Really Bad Ads.
Who doesn't? I don't care what country you're from. That's funny.
A bad ad's a bad ad.
Yes, exactly. And you know, we've gotten a lot of them from Australia too. So you have as bad a writers as we do.
Oh yeah.
down there. But send them in to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Remember to copy and paste the entire really bad ad into the email. We have a great prize tomorrow too. So get your ads in today. Thank you, Fiona. And thank you so, you know, I always thank you for coming on and co-hosting, but you listen every day too. So thank you for being a listener.
It's my dog walking listening.
You know, it's funny because, you know, here we are doing an Australian show. What, 2 weeks ago, we were talking a lot about Sweden and all of our Swedish listeners. It's so cool. Yeah. The internet has made this such a much smaller world in many ways.
Global village.
Yep. And it's so good to know you. Thanks, Fiona.
Thank you. Have a great week.
All right. Take care, everybody.